Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools. You can learn more at schoolspiritvending.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
In today's episode, I'm joined by fellow principal and podcast host, Will Parker. And let me tell you what, he is now one of my, easily one of my favorite people. And not only that, he brings such value. Like, it was like getting punched in the face. My leadership bell has been rung. Will brought so much value, talking about connecting at the head and the heart. Is education a calling for you? But he's a masterful storyteller. Keep listening for this story he shares very vulnerably about a folder that he had to put at the corner of his principal's desk, and it served as a great reminder. You're going to love this show. I wouldn't be surprised if it rises to the top 10 pretty quick. Listen, I never take for granted that you're listening. Thanks for tuning in. You want to become a better leader, and I'm honored. So enjoy the show. Well, hey there, better leaders. I am here and so excited to be talking to Will Parker, a colleague of mine in terms of principal, but also a fellow podcaster. So he's really going to bring a ton of value to the show today. Give me a second to introduce him. Will is principal of Skytook High School, just north of Tulsa, Oklahoma. As a high school teacher, he taught language arts, creative writing, and AP English. As principal of a Title I school, his school's innovative approaches to collaboration, remediation, and mentoring have resulted in marked improvements in student performance. He is regularly asked to speak to principal associations, school leadership conferences, and graduate classes on effective leadership practices, organizational behavior, and digital tools for enhancing school communication. His first book, Principal Matters, The Motivation, Courage, and Action Needed for School Leaders, was released in 2014. He hosts a weekly podcast and blogs at his website, williamdparker.com. All that, guys, will be linked in the show notes. And Will, so excited to have you on the show.
Daniel, I am so excited to be here. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to me. I've admired your work for a long time. I love Twitter. I love podcasting. I love all these connections that we've been doing digitally. And so it's just a blast to be able to sit down with you and talk.
Yeah, it's neat how this happens. And, you know, hopefully one day we'll get to shake each other's hand and look each other in the eye. But, you know, just over spring break, and this is released, and so it's summer. So people have to, you know, dial back, remember what spring break was like. But myself and my girlfriend, we went to San Antonio, and we got to meet, you know, somebody that I connected with over social media and grew my professional learning network with. And she really challenged my thinking, and it was cool to meet her for brunch. And she showed us around San Antonio a little bit. And that's really the beauty of what we do, right? Awesome. Connecting social media, doing the podcast. It's about growing those professional networks.
Awesome. And look, that's awesome. I was just in San Antonio in February talking to the Texas Association of Secondary Principals. They had an aspiring principal, assistant principal conference there. So they had a couple of hundred admins that came in. Man, there's some great things happening in Texas, and they invited me back as a speaker for their summer conference, which is in June also. So if this is going live in June, Texas admins, I'm going to be at your summer conference June 14th. Would love to see you guys there. Austin's such a great place.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. So I'm just curious, this is going off script already. Yeah. I kind of do that, but
no, that's fine.
What do you try to bring to the table, right, when you're a speaker? So you know you've got these hungry principals. Mm-hmm. They're just waiting for Will to show up and bring it. Like, how do you prepare and what do you bring? What do you offer?
Well, you know, I have been a school admin now since 2004. And so, you know, I've sat myself in a lot of those workshops and conferences, and sometimes I come in hungry and sometimes I come in skeptical, because I've also been in situations where what has been brought to me hasn't been as valuable as what I wanted. And so over the years, as I've been stretched and have grown in leadership, I have often thought, you know, what are the messages that can resonate both with our heads and our hearts at the same time? And so as I've been connecting with leaders in my area, and I've had opportunities to share, and especially with new principals or aspiring principals, and I've seen those, my stories and my lessons resonating with them, I just started blogging. And so about 4 years ago, I thought, I'm just going to start writing about the things that I'm talking about and sharing out ideas as I'm a practicing principal, because I'm still learning all the time. And that generated my first book. And then eventually I started podcasting too, because I realized that there's such a great platform for audio, not just written content. And so all of those things together have kind of just opened doors for me to speak. So when I'm keynoting, which is so much different than writing, or I'm speaking at conferences and breakout sessions, normally what I'm trying to bring into those is a combination of, I want people to feel motivated by inspiring stories. I want them to have practical, hands-on tools that they can take back and implement in their own leadership to make their leadership feel more effective. And I want them to walk out remembering, I want them to walk out remembering that they're heroes, because they're not told that very often.
Right.
And I have sat so many times in meetings with school leaders. I'm also the state coordinator for my state for National Association of Secondary Principals. So Oklahoma has a state association, and then I go to D.C. each year for advocacy and visit congressmen and senators. And I'll sometimes be sitting in an advocacy training in D.C. with literally administrators from every state in America. And I'll just look across the sea of faces and I'll think to myself, I don't know if anybody in this room has any idea of how much influence and power, and not power in like an egotistical way, but power and influence in an amazing way. These are people that are serving kids every single day, and the potential that they have for influencing and changing their communities and our world is unbelievable. And I'm not sure how often they're being told that. And so when I have the opportunity to share ideas and lessons and research, I always want to wrap it in a message of reminding them that what they do is so important. What they do really matters. And so that's kind of what I bring to the table when I talk.
Yeah, so much of that is great stuff. But I love what you ended with, because realizing you're a hero, you know, that the work that you're doing matters as a school leader, it's that encouragement that you need, right?
It is.
That's why I try to, with my people, build them up.
Yes.
Keep them positive. Keep their mindset, the frame of mind on the right thing. Because I feel like if they feel respected, yeah, if they're built up at work, if they're encouraged, if they're excited to come to work every day, that's going to directly impact the kids.
Well, and it's a lonely calling, Daniel. So that one of the things I admire that you're doing with your mastermind groups is, you know, you're giving a platform for people who often work, even though they can be surrounded by other people who may be able to relate in some ways to their work can be very lonely, especially if they're only the only school leader in their building. And even if they're sharing that leadership, if they're the site principal, for instance, they may have a role that's unique for only them. And so what's great about what you're doing with masterminding is you're pulling people together who can share those experiences and those voices with other people to whom they can really relate. And that's powerful.
Yeah, I didn't even know you'd bring that up, but that's the thing, right? It is a lonely job, and who do you have to turn to that you could be just brutally honest, like, here's where I'm at, here's where I need help, and that is, I guess, the biggest value through that group coaching model. I don't want to spend a lot of time there. So this is about you, my friend. Tell me, you know, what inspired...
Well, when I get a chance to get you on my show, I'll let my listeners and readers know that too, so we can talk about the things you're doing.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'd love to do that. That's cool. What inspired you, Will, to pursue a career in education?
I'll try to, because I know we've got a time limit, and I'm a storyteller.
We love the stories. It's okay. We don't have to hit all the questions.
I'll jump in. You take me as far as you want me to go. But
yeah.
When I graduated college in the mid-90s, I really wanted to do some work overseas. I was interested in teaching English as a second language or working in church ministry, something that would take me out of the country, because I had done some traveling in college and just loved that international experience. And so I stepped into teaching right out of college as a temporary gig. I thought, I'm going to do this for a couple of years and get on my feet, get established, get some experience as an educator in a career, and then I'll transition into my dream. And every summer I would finish the school year and I would go home. And I would be getting ready and, you know, vacationing, but also kind of thinking through what's my next steps. And I would spend a lot of time setting goals and thinking and praying. And I would always come back to what's my next step going to be. And I would keep coming back to the same place, which was, I think I need to come back to the classroom another year. And this kept happening. In my fifth year that I was in the classroom, I was named Teacher of the Year in my building. And I was talking to a really good friend of mine one night about, what's next for me? And he finally just looked at me and he said, "Well, I know you talk a lot about going overseas and maybe getting involved in missions or or international work. But he asked me a question no one had ever asked me before, and I know this will sound weird, but I'm going to just say exactly what he said. He said, "Have you ever considered that teaching may be the cross that you've been called to bear?" And I just stopped for a second because I hadn't ever thought of that. And because I had not looked at my career as a calling. I had looked at it as a stepping stone, as a temporary gig to get me where I wanted to go next. And that conversation really shifted my mindset of looking at maybe this is where I need to be, and maybe there's a reason that's deeper than my desire to go do something overseas or my desire to pursue those other dreams. Maybe there's a way to find fulfillment in what I'm doing right now that I've never even thought of. And that really began to change the way that I taught. And even though I felt like I was being an effective teacher then anyway, I think it accelerated my focus and my ability to not just do the job well because that was what was expected, but also to begin loving my job. And so I've been an educator ever since. And of course, that transition has included school leadership now too.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine the gravity of what you experience when you see it more, you know, not so much the job, but the calling, right? That you were specifically created to be in schools, to live out, you know, those strengths that God had put in you to serve, you know, your community. You know, you like to tell stories. Well, I'm curious, once you had that awakening, so to speak, can mm-hmm. you remember how that impacted your approach to education?
Well, you know, I don't know if I can give a tangible story, but I'll give you an experience I remember from that time. And a lot of it is just heart. You know, I remember trying to be very intentional with my students when I'm standing outside of my classroom each day. I really believe it's important to greet kids and to kind of set the tone when they're walking in your room. And so I just made it a habit of saying to my students, "Hey, I'm glad you're here. Glad you're here. Welcome back. Glad you're here," and greeting them each day. And sometimes they would give me weird looks, and especially freshmen who are kind of in that awkward age where they'll just say exactly what they think. They would sometimes say, "Mr. Parker, why do you always tell us you're so glad we're here?"
what's your problem?
And so finally one day I just said, "Well, listen, you guys, this is a free country. And even though compulsory ed law requires you to come to school, you really don't have to. And yet you get up every single morning and you choose to get out of bed and you walk in this building and you come to my room, and so I think that's great. And so we're going to make the best of it." And one time I was actually at church on a Sunday. This was years later, and 20-something-year-old walked up to me and asked what every teacher hears from former students. "Mr. Parker, do you remember me?" And of course, I'm trying to remember because he looks so different now. And he reminds me, his name is Anthony. And then I can see him, you know, I can see the ninth grader in the face of the 20-year-old. And he says, "You probably don't remember this, but every day when I walked in your room," sorry, man.
No, it's all right.
"Every day when I walked in your room, you would tell me, 'I'm glad to see you.'" And he said, "One night I was, my parents had a huge fight and I'd left the home and I slept outside all night long. And when I came in the next day, you were my first class of the day. And you said, 'When I walked in the room, I'm glad to see you.'" And he said, "You have no idea what that meant to me that day."
Wow. What an impact. You know, we talked some spiritual stuff, earlier in this podcast, but you know, if you've read the Bible, that kind of thing, I think there's so much power in our words. You know, we believe that mm-hmm. God spoke the world, the universe, spoke it into existence. And there's a proverb too that I don't have it memorized, but the idea is that kind words are like honey for the soul. You know, it's basically
that's great.
Yeah,
love that.
Yeah. So I just always type in honey for the soul in words in Google and it pops up. But you live that out.
I love that. I've read that, but I never thought about applying it to that. That's great,
wow.
Daniel.
Well, I love the story. I mean, you were living that out. The kid is going through an incredibly emotional time. And I really appreciate your vulnerability in sharing that story and just the impact you had on him. He's remembering that as a 20-year-old. He's going to remember that his whole life. And that's huge. And, you know, I'm curious if we could switch a little bit of gears. What does that look like then, how you interact with teachers?
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. I thought you were going to talk about students, but let me think through that answer for just a moment, because I think one of the struggles that I think I had going from teaching to school admin, let me first talk about how I've done that wrong, and then I'll talk about how I've done it right.
Great.
I think one of the struggles that I had moving from teaching into school admin was that I assumed most adults had that kind of heart for kids. And so, and so, yeah. So when I made that transition and suddenly I'm discovering that I don't share those same values with everyone, that was hard for me because I'm used to correcting kids when I see them doing things that aren't on track with the direction I'm going, but I wasn't used to correcting adults on that direction. And I had been through enough training and done enough mentoring and talked to enough other, I'd worked long enough in schools to know, you know, that I didn't share the same values with everybody in my buildings. But so much of that is isolated because you're in your own classroom and they're in their classrooms and you're interacting socially. And so, you don't expect to see it professionally. And so that was a struggle for me for a while because I wasn't quite sure how do I correct my peers. And because when I first transitioned into school leadership, I was much younger. And a lot of the people who I was suddenly leading were either my age or older. And so it was a hard transition. And I'll have to say that it took me time to realize that no one is ever too old for accountability. And so part of my responsibility in working with adults and teachers is the same responsibility that I had with kids. It's just taken me longer to grow into that and to be comfortable reaching out to an adult. First of all, reaching out to them with courtesy and hospitality and gratitude for the good things that they're doing, but then also being able to reach out to them if they're not displaying those kinds of values and having uncomfortable conversations so that we're serving kids right. And so, so it's tougher. In relationships with adults, because you also know each other longer. You can have a kid in your classroom for a year or a couple of years, but when you've got adults with whom you're working, some of whom you've hired, you could be together for a decade or more. So those are long-term relationships. So I don't know how to answer that quickly, but I will say that in my relationships with teachers, I try to remember that they're people, not just educators. They need to be comforted if they lose a loved one. They need to be told they're doing a great job. They need to be taken care of, and in some cases pampered, because teachers aren't given a lot of perks. Right. And so for, you know, so when I call a faculty meeting, I have boxes of donuts there because they deserve a treat when they show up to a meeting. And I open up our, in our office area, we open up our office supply area, and it's open anytime someone needs to come get something. I don't want them to go to the store every time they need something for their kids. I know schools where teachers are, you know, digging in their own pockets to buy supplies. And I want to treat them like I wanted to be treated when I was in the classroom, with the same support and courtesy. And I do not do that perfectly. But I try to be visible in the mornings, just like I stood outside my classroom. I try to be in my office area in the commons when kids and teachers are coming in each day to welcome them to school too.
What is the most popular donut at the staff meeting?
I'm going to say that, I just forget what they're called. Sausage rolls. Could you, would you believe that I can get like all these awesome cake donuts and chocolate covered donuts? And, but I've also always get a box of sausage rolls, and those things are gone fast.
Super fast. Yeah. I probably didn't see that question coming. I don't know why I was interested in it, but what's the most popular donut? Sausage rolls. Hey, I'm really interested in routines. And so I'm curious, what does the first hour of your day look like?
You know, I think some people would think it's torture, but I love my morning routine. In fact, just a quick snapshot, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I get up about 5:15 and I run for 3 miles. And and on Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, I just do some fitness stuff like push-ups, set-ups, pull-ups.
Yeah.
I come back home, I fix coffee, take vitamins, shower, dress, and then my daughter comes down. I've got 4 children. 2 of them are in high school. 1 of them still drives with daddy. And so we jump in the car and we drive to school. And sometimes we listen to news, sometimes something inspirational. Sometimes it's the Bible. And sometimes we just talk, or sometimes it's just quiet. It just kind of depends day to day. But that's really my first hour, is just getting up, getting my heart pumping, getting my thoughts together, eating something nutritious, and getting that wonderful nectar of heaven coffee in my hand. So that I can start the day. But it's really funny because last night I was getting ready to go to bed and it was Tuesday. And I know it's weird to the nights before I'm going to get up and run the next morning. I get so excited. Huh. I don't know why I enjoy that. I think part of it is because in school leadership, there's so much stress.
Yeah.
And it's the snippet of my morning, especially on the run mornings, where there's so much stress relief. Mm-hmm. And when I'm running, it's I'm kind of insulated from everything, from my technology, from conversations, from anything, but just what's in front of me and the morning sun that's not quite peaked up yet, and people that are still tucked in their beds, and it's just kind of me and the sidewalk and sometimes the moon, and I just love it.
You know, and I'm the same way. Work out in the mornings, either lifting or running. Mm-hmm. I've done marathons, then half marathon this year in Galveston.
I'm not that brave.
But. I don't want to be that brave. I'm done with that stuff. I'm committing to like 6 miles as a long run, and I think 3 is like a real perfect length. I'm really into interval training now because it just hurts the body, the wear and tear of those long miles.
I just don't want to have to replace my hips or my knees. Right. So far, I'm good with what I got. Yeah. So I'm happy.
And I'm curious. So you talked about that insulation, right? The stress hasn't gotten in stress relief. And you said also a protection from technology. I'm curious, at what moment or at what point in your morning, when is it that you actually start checking email and that kind of stuff?
It depends. A lot of times when I get back from that run and I'm putting coffee on, I'll flip my phone open and not flip it. I've got an iPhone, but I'll push the button and I'll see, you know, is there anything that needs to be on my radar? Sometimes I'm getting text already that early about people that aren't coming into work or just heads up on situations.
Okay.
And so sometimes in that little window between getting ready and running, I'll just take a peek and see what's there. But I'm not going to typically read deeply or respond to stuff or start work because I don't have enough time.
Gotcha. As a novice principal, I have experienced the stress of the job. And a challenge of mine and probably of a lot of listeners is identifying the priorities at work. I'm just curious how you sift through all the major things that need to get done. And you say, this is what I need to focus on today.
Mm-hmm. You know, every day looks a little different, and that's something I talk about in my first book, Principle Matters. I think, in fact, the first chapter is just kind of a log of what a typical day looks like in my life, or what a typical day might look like. And then, of course, I can relate that to other principles too. So every day's different, but they're always packed. And most school leaders know you often go from putting one fire out to the next fire. So what I try to do is in advance block into my calendar the things that I believe are priorities so that I'm not squeezing those out with all the urgent. And I know you've heard this before. School leaders talk about it all the time. Don't let the urgent kill the important. And so, you know, what's urgent and what's important aren't always the same. And of course, it's our responsibility, just like a first responder, to make sure that the urgent isn't creating any kind of environment at your school where learning can't take place. But if you spend your whole day responding to urgent, then you often miss out on important. So I want to make sure I'm in classrooms. I want to make sure that I'm getting my observations into rooms, that I'm following up with teachers. I want to make sure that I'm engaging and helping complete the goals we've set. So I always set my calendar. For instance, all my observations are set out in a year in advance. I don't tell teachers the exact day I'm coming in. I just give them a week of time. On this week, expect me in that room, not just for a walkthrough, but I'm going to stay for the hour so we can I can spend set time in your room sometime during that week. And that way, those things are embedded before anything happens, so I can kind of juggle things around that week so that teacher and I can make that happen.
Right.
I do the same thing with team meetings. So if I'm going to be meeting with my admin team, or if I'm going to be meeting with my secretary, or if I'm going to be meeting with data teams or other teams, I embed those in our schedules ahead of time so that it's already set in my calendar. So when something does happen, I can look at a teacher or student or parent and say, hey, I've got this much time before I have another commitment. And so sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But by creating those expectations and setting those meetings and those touch points ahead of time, then I try to build everything else around that. We also use Google Docs and Google Calendars among my staff so that we can share. If we're working on projects together, we can share docs out with each other. Our teachers and data teams use Google Docs like crazy to share data on students. And so there's just so many great digital tools for catching up. And my secretary and I and my admin team, they all see my calendar. So they know where I'm at, when I'm supposed to be places. And I schedule the time every single week to sit down with my own secretary because we work together all the time. We don't always get to share and talk and have exchange about, okay, where are you going to be and what's going on and what's your priorities? And that's a really important relationship because she takes care of making sure that she deflects stuff away from me that someone else can take care of.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. I mean, you're scheduling that out even up to a year in advance, utilizing digital tools. You know, listeners, what Will is doing is just protecting his time, right? And going back to what you said, don't let the urgent kill the important. on paper, you know what the priorities are. And fires are always going to be there. The work is always going to be there. The requests will always be there. And so by prioritizing that on the calendar, I'm a huge proponent of that. I really appreciate how you broke that down for the listeners there.
Sure.
Well, what are you particularly proud of in terms of your school for accomplishing or attempting recently?
Oh, my goodness. I'm so proud. I could do a whole show just on that. You know, our teachers and, you know, we're a Title I school, so we have a large number of our kids who are on free and reduced lunches. And so if you look at our scores, we don't score the highest of the schools in our area, but we always score above state averages on our tests. But I think what I'm most important most recently is that not only have we really been targeting how do we remediate kids that are struggling, but we've also increased advanced offerings for kids too. So this was the first year that our school was recognized as a College Board honor roll school. And so we were really excited because we've just had so many increases in the number of AP offerings that we're giving now and the number of kids taking and passing those tests that we were able to get that designation. So I'm just proud that I'm in a school that not only are we servicing kids in those high need categories, but we're also stepping up the rigor for kids who are achieving and advancing and wanting to take advanced placement before, you know, to take college level coursework before they're out of high school.
It's definitely stuff to be proud of. You know, we were doing some work like that at Brooks College Prep, my former school, and increasing that access to great rigorous programs for kids at risk. I mean, when then you get into the calling of the work, you know, that's, I see you smiling now. So that's what gets you up, right? I mean, that is getting you excited. So I love the work you're doing there.
There's just so many other things, Daniel. We're a school that also has really strong partnerships with our career tech.
Yeah.
So, you know, so our high school kids, I talk to our freshmen every year when they come in, and I said, you know, I talked with them about, by the time that you are a junior in this school, because we're a 4-year high school, you need to have made a choice. You're either going to be, you know, taking advanced coursework, you're either going to be doing some kind of career tech offering so that you're pursuing some kind of career, or you can enroll concurrently, because we have relationships with our community college where you can start college work here in school and be earning college credit before you graduate. And so it's just exciting to be in a school where those many options are available for students. In fact, our career tech, we've partnered with them for so long. Our kids leave campus to go to 4 different campuses where they can take a advantage of one of 16 different career tech options.
Whoa.
All kinds of awesome industry options.
Yeah.
But we've had such a good relationship with them that they're sending us a teacher next year. They're paying for an instructor to come into our building for half a day and teach a new pre-engineering STEM course for kids. And they're providing the materials, they're providing the technologies and the instructor. And that's been years of partnership and talking and dreaming together. So I just get really, really pumped when I start thinking of the options and the opportunities that kids have when they come to school. And that's why I'm such a huge, and I know that leaders who listen to this podcast come from every walk, public ed, private ed, charter schools. But as a public educator, I just get so excited because the notion or the idea that public ed is failing kids is just completely wrong. You just have to look at the right places. And and this is one of those places that I'm so proud my children get to go to.
Yeah, that's a good to great type stuff, I think, because through developing a relationship over years, you now see the fruit in the sense that they're providing the instructors, the resources, the materials, and it's a true partnership. You know, you got that saying that it takes a village to raise a child. Well, you guys are living that out as well. So kudos to you. That's great stuff.
Thanks.
Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools. And believe it or not, their CEO and founder, Matt Miller, was a guest on Episode 5 of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. He can increase your school spirit with custom stickers for your school and raise funds at the same time. There's no upfront costs, no volunteers, no selling. It's absolutely free to you, the school. If you're sick of the same old ways of raising money, check out School Spirit Vending at schoolspiritvending.com. What is the advice you'd give, Will, to novice principals? What do you wish you knew as you started off in this role?
It reminds me of a funny story, because when I was doing my master's degree in educational leadership, I made it a goal to reach out to principals or former principals and ask them that question. You know, what would you tell me before I step into this role that you wish somebody had told you? And I got a lot of great feedback, you know, from people. But I can remember one guy in particular. He was a college professor who had been a teacher and a school admin and then moved into higher ed. And I had grabbed him in the hallway during an evening class and asked him that question. And he just stopped for a moment and he looked at the carpet and then he looked back at me. And that was the one response I didn't expect.
Oh, man.
He said, well, I probably could say I was lucky if I made the right decision about 25% of the time when I was a school leader. And I just was like in shock because right. – And of course, he's a good teacher, so he's trying to shake me up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, what do you mean? He goes, listen, you go into this thinking that you know how to do everything.
Yeah.
And it won't take you long to figure out that there are going to be decisions you're going to make that you've never had to make before, and you're going to do the best you can, but you're going to look back later and realize that you didn't call it right, but you're going to do the best you can. But over time, you'll become a better decision maker. And I remember walking away from that conversation really troubled because I like being in control. I like feeling like I've made the right decision. You know, if no one else is, you know, making the right decision, by golly, I am. I think a lot of us walk around with some chips on our shoulders thinking we've got it all figured out. We know the right ways to do things. Give me my chance and I'll show you how to run a school. And I don't think I was ever that overtly arrogant, but I think that all of us kind of manage those thoughts and feelings. And so I would just tell a novice principal, I'll say this as nicely as I can, you're going to have to get over yourself and you're going to have to get over the fact that you are not perfect and you're going to have to make the best decisions you can on the information and the counsel that you have at the time, but you'll never do it perfectly and that's okay. And over time, you're going to look back and realize how you would have done that differently, but you will not have had the information, the counsel, or the wisdom to know that until later. And so accept that you won't do it perfectly, but do the best you can with what you have. And you can go to bed at night and put your head on the pillow and sleep well. I think that's hard because a lot of leaders are control freaks and we like to feel like we can figure everything out. And in leadership, you have to give in to the fact that you cannot control everything. And I think that's a huge it's a huge epiphany that I think a lot of leaders need to accept in order to walk into their jobs with peace of mind. And I think that's why a lot of the leaders burn out, because they feel so often like there are things they can't control. It frustrates them. And because they can't get a handle on everything, they lose sight of the things that are going well.
So was there something in your career or some type of mindset shift that helped you really absorb that truth? Because going from somebody that likes to, you know, lead everything and call the shots and make the right call, right? Mm-hmm. To building a team, to getting smarter people around you so that you can serve your community at a higher level and even giving yourself permission to make mistakes. How do you make that transition?
Well, that would be a long story. Let me see if I can, and that's a great question, Daniel. So let me make sure that I give it the respect that it deserves and not just shoot out a quick answer. When I stepped from teaching to school admin, it was a crisis time for me because I remember how proud I was of my classroom management as a teacher, my good instruction, my ability to get along with people. And suddenly I was almost overwhelmed with the number of conflicts I was helping resolve, the really tough decisions that had to be made, the deep life situations that people were walking into my office with, whether it's kids or parents or other adults in my building. And so part of the there was a lot of emotional stretching that had to take place for me. And I remember being really troubled, asking myself, man, am I cut out for this? Is this really, I knew school leadership would be tough, but I didn't realize it would be this tough. And part of the mistake that I was making during that same time was trying to do such a good job and control so many of those outcomes that I was investing so much time in trying to problem solve everything that I was beginning to ignore the other essentials in my life that keep someone balanced when they need to be managing those things. And let me just give you a story. When I was probably year two into my school admin experience, I was getting up super early every morning. I would get up sometimes at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. just so I could finish the task that I hadn't finished the day before.
Wow.
I was staying up late at night, you know, supervising games and getting home late, but then staying up after I got home so I could work on emails and answer questions and try to find solutions to all these things that were going on. I was in a school with 1,400 kids, and I was one of three admins, and one of those admins had to leave middle of the year, so there were two assistants that were managing discipline for all these large numbers of kids. And one night, I was, we just put the kids to bed, and I was a young dad too. So not only was I a school leader, but I was, my wife and I had four young children. And so we had just put our kids to bed, and I had opened my laptop, and my wife came and just sat beside me, and she said, Will, can we talk? And I said, yeah. She said, I just need to tell you that the kids and I have accepted that you are a dad and a husband on the weekends, but pretty much the rest of the time the school owns you. Mm. And she didn't say it with bitterness, and mm-hmm. she didn't say it with like resentment. She just said it with like resignation. Like, it just is what it is. And she said, in fact, I really think that you are a shell of the man that you used to be. And that night when she went to bed, I did not work. I opened up my laptop and I wrote a letter of resignation, and I'll never forget, because I wrote out exactly what I would say if I had to resign from my position, and I put it in a folder. And the next morning I took it and I placed it on the corner of my desk where I could see that folder sitting there. And I told myself, I'm going to figure out a way to either be, in this case, it was an assistant principal. I'm going to figure out a way to be an assistant principal and still serve my family and take care of my own health, or I'm going to quit this position and go start a new career. And that was a turning point for my mindset, because I had been trying so hard to control in all the areas of the school like I would control my classroom. But I had to accept that there were some things that were going to be beyond my control. And here's the surprising thing, Daniel, and this is what I try to tell young leaders especially. When I started getting up early instead of working and exercising, and I started taking better care of my nutrition and better care of my sleep and spending more quality time with my family and nourishing my soul with good things to read or in spiritual development, then guess what happened at work?
You're more productive.
Guess what happened at work? Suddenly, I have a better capacity to manage the crazy things happening at my work. Mm-hmm. And that's not a silver bullet. That took me a long time to figure that out. It took me years to kind of reach into those areas and begin to find balance in each one of those areas. I'm not saying that's an overnight story. So to the novice leader or to the young leader or to the leader who's simply overwhelmed, whether they've been doing this for 1 year or 10 years, I just want to remind you to invest in yourself, invest in all of those other areas that will feed your ability to take care of your school.
That's another incredible and vulnerable story that you shared. And thank you for your honesty and your transparency. Listeners, if you're not getting just like punched in the jaw right now and getting your leadership bell rung, you have something terribly wrong with you. And I hope you come back to the show after I just made fun of you. But I think most of the listeners are going to be really relating to that and being challenged. Just so much good stuff to pick apart. I think the biggest lesson that we have to drive home is that's something that Aaron Walker, he's been on my show twice now, and he's actually my coach and my mentor, and he's the one who taught me to do masterminds because I'm in his.
But that's great.
But the point is, his dad, he loves to tell a story about his dad. They grew up very humble beginnings, and his father wasn't good with money. They didn't have a lot of it growing up, and that doesn't mean you're successful. It just, life was hard for them. But at his funeral, there was a line down the block for the lives that his pops had touched.
That's so sweet.
And you know, that folder moment for me when you shared that story, it's like when Aaron says to us men, like, because it's a men's group. So for the listeners here, men, women, of course. But you know, who's going to be at your funeral, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I worked on my life plan for the first time last year, working through some of Michael Hyatt's materials, I'm thinking of developing maybe something like that for school leaders, but I had to write my eulogy, right?
Wow.
I'm 38. By the time this releases, I'm staring down 39. So pretty, you know, happy age for me. But I had to write my eulogy. And in terms of what would my family say about me, my friends and my coworkers?
Yeah.
And it put me in this mindset, Will, that was just like, you know, life really is just a speck of dust, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And when you get that feedback from family, you know, exactly. So I really appreciate you sharing that. And listeners, you know, if you find yourself in that position, it's never too late to change. Start investing in yourself. And really, the rest of the stuff's going to take care of itself at work. And if you're at a place where they don't want you to invest in yourself, take care of yourself, they want you to answer every email and fix every problem every single day like that, you know, you have to question if you're in the right spot, I would argue.
That's great. That's great feedback. And I remember talking to a really close friend during that same time about, you know, choices, and because eventually I ended up transitioning to the school I'm at now, which really was a better match for the ability for me to find that balance. But I remember struggling with, you know, my choice, you know, should I step this direction? Should I do this? In fact, one night, one of my buddies just looked at me and said, "Well, we do not live in communist China. You know, you can choose. You can choose where you want to serve, where you want to lead, where you want to be. And it obviously doesn't happen overnight, but you still have the ability to make those choices, you know, to create that kind of environment or find that kind of place that supports those values."
Mm. Well, we're going to wrap it up and head sure. to like the final round, but you have kicked my butt so much with this interview.
Thank you for all that feedback. Thanks for Aaron's story too. I want to go back and listen to those podcasts. Aaron Walker sounds amazing.
Absolutely. You know, Will, I'll get your address offline, but he wrote a sure. book for you From the Top, and I'd love to buy that book for you and send it to you.
Well, thank you. I'd love to read it.
Cool. Yeah. So just getting into the final round here, and you've offered so much value. Maybe we'll bring you back for a second show at some point.
That would be fun.
But we talk about View from the Top book. We have, you know, we mentioned your book as well, Principal Matters. And besides those two, what's one book you think every principal should read right now and why?
This is going to sound really odd on a principal podcast, but I'm going to recommend a business book. And this was one that I read when I transitioned from assistant principal. And I was an assistant principal. I was in assistant principal roles for 9 years before I became a high school principal, which I've been in now for 4 years. But the year that I made that transition from assistant, where I had a lot of responsibilities and shared a lot of leadership with my principal, when I realized, okay, now this is going to be a new role for me, I actually reached out and picked up a book by Dave Ramsey called Entree Leadership. And a lot of people know Dave Ramsey as a financial guru. He talks a lot about budgeting and financial freedom. He's got a national syndicated radio show. He does a high school curriculum, by the way, that our kids get here their senior year on financial literacy. But his book, Entree Leadership, it was a book about how he built his company and how he built his team and his culture. And I thought, I need this, because this is going to be a perspective from somebody who's leading that's not in a school. What values can I grab from this? Just like Good to Great, you know, there's great business books out there. Just like John Maxwell's books on, you know, the irrefutable laws of leadership. So Dave Ramsey's book was great because, you know, leading a company of 300 employees, he talks about how to set a vision. Mm-hmm. He talks about how to hire slowly, fire fast. He talks about creating cultures of excellence. And one thing that really helped me the most was he talked about how to create key responsibility areas for your staff members. And I'd never heard anybody suggest that. And as an organizational leader, because that's a hat we all wear, I had never thought about that. And so, you know, we spend a lot of time in classrooms as instructional leaders. And then as principals, we spend a lot of time managing how our teachers perform and all the other functions that a school administrator does. But very little training in my master's degree happened around personnel, purchase orders, all the things, the office, the accountabilities that happen within an office structure. And very few – I think very few principals actually know what their secretaries do and their registrars do and their counselors do and their paraprofessionals do and their librarians do. So when I made that transition, even though I was with the same staff that I had been with before, I sat down with them all and said, listen, we've worked together for a lot of years, but I want to make sure that I have a greater understanding of your roles. So we made lists of every one of their roles, their key responsibility areas, what every person's main responsibilities were for their area. And it was wonderful because – and we do this every year. We start the year together as a staff like this, and we end the year together. And I'm talking about my non-certified mostly and my admin team and my counselors. My teachers have different curriculum maps and different expectations. But with those people whose roles I was not as familiar with, we together created their key responsibility areas. And those serve as a great reminder for them of these are your priority responsibilities. We also discovered where people were duplicating services that didn't need to. Hmm. And we also discovered where people needed to be cross-trained because maybe only one person knew how to do something really essential. And if we lost them or something tragic happened, then no one else would know. And so those KRAs is what Dave Ramsey called them. I've adopted those as a leader too. I've got some samples of those in my first book, and I can share some out to you later to Daniel if you want to see some samples of what we've done with our staff. But they've served as a great way to set on the front end of a school year what those expectations are going to be, because often as school leaders, we'd spend a lot of time correcting mid-performance. And I think we'd save ourselves time if we explained on the front end exactly what's expected.
Yep.
And that KRA provides that accountability too, because then when the question is, who's responsible for this, we already know.
Oh, that's so good. And Will, just so you know, guess what? Aaron Walker, my coach, has been in a mastermind with Dave Ramsey for 30 years.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
But now for sure, Aaron Walker's book will be on my list of to read.
Oh, I'm sending it to you. So yeah, but it's amazing. They kind of bumped into each other. It was just a freak occurrence and then became great friends. It's neat to hear.
I guarantee when I go listen to your podcast with Aaron that I'm going to recognize his voice, because has he been guest on other podcasts too?
Oh, he's been everywhere. Yeah.
Okay. I think I already know who he is, because now that you put that connection together with Dave Ramsey, I think I've heard him talking. He is dynamite.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah.
Will, if you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
You know, I've looked over some of your questions, and so this was one of those that I was like, if Daniel asked me that question, what am I going to say? And so the two things came to me. Can I do two?
Yeah, sure.
One is I said, coding. You know, I just think that like computer scientists are like the wizards of the world. And I wish I was smart enough to figure out how I could, you know, code, because I think it would like set me off on some adventure I've never been on before. Because I'm, even though I love blogging and podcasting, I do not feel very techie. And so I just kind of wish I knew that world. It's like, you know, a mechanic understands an engine. I wish I could understand coding. The second thing I was going to say, if I could be good at anything, I wish I was smart enough. And this would be the $1 million thing. I wish I was smart enough to figure out how to create funding sources that really reward teachers for the value they provide students. And I do not think there's any political party who will ever figure that out, unless maybe they're in the Netherlands or Singapore. But I just so wish that I could find a solution for rewarding. We have such an amazing profession. And we're serving all day long and all year long, and teachers are just pouring their hearts out. Great teachers. And I know not all teachers are in those categories, but so many of them I know. And yet the way that they're rewarded is not even close to the value that they deserve. And so I wish that I had that magic solution, and I don't.
Well, congratulations, Will. You've made it to the end of the show. This question's quite a doozy. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
That's a great question, and I'm just going to try to keep it simple. I would, and I'm not going to talk about design or furniture or technology or any of those things that would be wonderful, because I would love to have a Disneyland for my kids to walk in every single day. But I'm convinced that if I could, whether I created that kind of architecture or they walked into four bare walls, if I could give them these three things, I think that I would be in a dreamland. Number one, I would hire teachers. I would only have teachers in my building that I want for my own children. Number two, I would ask those teachers every single day, connect your rigorous learning to as many real world experiences as possible, so that these kids are learning rigorously with powerful relationships with you, but with real world connections. And then number three, I would want every kid who leaves that school to have left with something they've designed or created or supported that could change the world. And so, because that's what education is. You know, there was, I think it was another question I had read that you'd asked before, Daniel, where you'd said, you know, what message would you put on on your school
marquee? The marquees. Yeah.
What question would you, or what message would you put on the school marquees if you could? And I thought, I was thinking, I would say, enter here with a hunger to learn and exit here prepared to change the world. Because it really doesn't matter to me what the design of the school is, how much resources, technologies you have, et cetera. If you have that kind of commitment and passion and desire and direction for teachers and kids, they're going to do amazing things.
Yeah, that's great. Will, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any actionable steps you'd like the listeners to take as a result of listening to the show?
I would love to share some resources too, Daniel. And by the way, thank you for all the resources that you've shared with leaders. Your website is amazing. Your guests on your podcast are amazing. And you're doing such great work in supporting and inspiring and providing great resources to school leaders. And I would love to connect with more of your readers. And if they wanted to jump over to my website at williamdparker.com, and if they're interested in receiving updates from me and they subscribe there, I'll send them – I have a small free ebook called 8 Hats, Essential Roles for School Leaders. And it's a great summary of a keynote that I do on the most important roles that I think you need to continuously be practicing and honing if you're going to serve your kids well. So I just like to share that resource out as an action step if they want to connect with me in that way. But I also would just love to know that this conversation, more than connecting people with me or more than, you know, the ways that we can follow up and all those things, I think what's most important to me is knowing that if anything that I said today resonates with school leaders, you and I may have been talking about this before we even started the show, I just want to remind school leaders that they are heroes, that they are making a difference in the lives of people every single day. And they're often the unsung heroes. They're the people that are unseen. And I know we've gone way long into this show, Daniel, so I don't want to take up any more time, but do you have time for one other quick story?
Of course. Bring the value. Well, this has been great. Yeah.
There's just such a powerful story that I heard about a fighter pilot who had flown during the Vietnam War. And his name was Charlie Plum. And Charlie had flown dozens of missions when he was shot down over Vietnam, and he was captured and put in a Vietnamese concentration camp for 6.5 years, which I can't even imagine that kind of grueling experience. And when he was liberated at the end of the war, he returned home, and he was eating in a cafe one night with his wife, and a gentleman walked up to the table about his age, and he said, "Are you Captain Plum?" And Charlie stood up and shook his hand, and the guy says, "You probably don't remember me, but I was on the same aircraft carrier as you. You were a pilot and I was a sailor." And Charlie said, "Well, it's nice to meet you." And the guy said, "Actually, I packed your parachute." And Charlie was just stumped. And he was like, "Wow." And the guy said, "How did it hold up?" And he goes, "Well, it saved my life. I mean, that's when I was ejected from the plane. A couple of panels were torn, but that parachute saved my life." So they shook hands and exchanged pleasantries. And then that night, Charlie Plum went to sleep, and he's got a great website if you ever want to check out the story. And he said he could not sleep because he kept laying there thinking, how many times was I on this ship with this guy in the bowels of this aircraft carrier who's packing parachutes? I'm the fighter pilot with the officer's uniform, and this guy's down there in his sailor uniform. And I never even thought about this man down there in the bowels of the ship. But tonight, I finally get to meet a man whose unseen work saved my life. And he was thinking, who else in my life has done work who I've never thanked? And so often, when I look at school leaders, they are the ones packing parachutes. They're the ones who every single day are serving kids and serving their schools. And if you're a school leader listening to this today, thank you for packing parachutes. And don't give up the fight, because what you're doing matters.
100% agree with that. And way to leave us again with another encouraging story. You really brought the value, Will. You're awesome. Listeners, you know, all the resources mentioned on the show will be in the show notes, especially Will's website, where you can get that newsletter and get the 8 Hats resource he was talking about. So highly encourage you to head over there and pick it up. Better leaders, thank you for investing yourself today by listening to the podcast. Remember that life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Will. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Will in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Will, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks, Daniel. Thanks for serving.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network. Podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.